We're holding on page 46 in Megillah, about six lines from the end of the page, Va'amar Rav Elazar, middle of Oysaf Dalad. We're in the middle of a series of statements in Agadah by Rav Elazar in the name of Rav Hanina, where we had the first one of them and a couple of the others in the middle had to do with the Megillah. The first one was about Rav Chumash Esther Malchus, that Esther had Ruach HaKodesh. And then we had several others, some of which directly have to do with the Megillah, and others not. So, Va'omer Rav Elazar, Omer Rav Hanina, Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Losis, Lias, HaTorah Baruch Kol Tzadik V'Tzadik. In the future, Hashem is going to be a crown on the head of every tzadik. Now in Chassidus, we talk about the idea that Rotzin that Keser is Rotzin Elyon. So now what we have is Tzadikim who do the Rotzin of Hashem, as the Gemara is going to talk about. So they get to have all the courses a Keser over their own heads. Shanema, as the Pasuk says, now the Gemara is going to now dash in three Psukim back to back from Yeshaya. We have them in the Haftorah of Shabbos Parshas Shmos. By Yomahu, the pasuk says, "Yi Hashem tzvokas la'teres tzvi v'goymer." On that day, Hashem will be a beautiful crown. So let's first quote the psukim, and then the Gemara is going to darsh in them phrase by phrase. La'teres tzvi, or tzfiras tifara, and for a tzfira is another word for a crown. Tzfira literally means an encircling thing of glory. L'shor amei, for the rest of his people, and the pasuk continues. The next pasuk says, "Or ruach mishpat," and it's for a spirit of judgment. For the ones who sit on in judgment, and who have strength, Meshivim Ochamashara, the ones who return to the war in the gates, meaning in other words, who are fighting back the war in their gates. Then the next pasuk continues in Yeshaya, the Gam Ela by Yayin Shogu, also these have strayed and gone astray with wine, or Vashecha To, and they've gone the wrong way with strong drink, and he continues over there with negative statements about him, Poku Plilia, they've gone out, or they've buckled. Poku means like a Poku that Gemara is going to associate it soon with Gehenim, but in the simple meaning, it means something like to stumble and fall, Plilia, in judgment. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is that first the pasuk is talking about the people who are acting the way Hashem wants, the l'shor amay and the ruach mishpat, etc., the ones who are acting well, and then the pasuk is going and contrasting them with the ones who get drunk and then try to pask in halacha and do it inappropriately. Now the Gemara is going to douch it in as follows. First of all, my la teres tzvi, what does it mean for a crown of tzvi? So the simple meaning of tzvi is beauty, but the Gemara douchens lo'osim tzivyon. Means that this is going to be for the people who do tzivyonoi, what Hashem wants. The word tzivyon has a few different meanings. One of them means the desire. Or the tzfiras tifara, and when the pasuk continues, that it will be a tzfira, which again is another word for crown, of tifara, of glory. That means when it's tzapim tifaratoi, it's going to be that this reward is going to be for those who look forward to Hashem's glory in the world. So tzfiras is, in other words, even though in the simple meaning of tzfira is a type of crown, the Gemara is dashing it as being related to the word sape, like sipisa of Yeshua, which means to hope for and to look forward to. Yochol Lakol. Now you would think that the pasuk is saying that these rewards are open to anybody who does Hashem's will and looks forward to Hashem's glory in the world. No, Talmud Lema L'Shar Amay. Therefore, the pasuk finishes off to the remnant of his nation. My L'Shar Amay L'Meisim Atzma Kishirayim. These are meant for people who act, who make themselves like Shirayim. So, in other words, they're humble. They don't think of themselves as the most important. Like we're only the leftovers. It has several other meanings as well. We've learned before. Another meaning of Mesamatsna Kishirayim, we've learned before in this shir, was that a person realizes that his neshama is the main thing, and his guf is tofel, to it. His guf is only like Shirayim relative to his neshama. That's another meaning of it. And also, for example, it means a person who recognizes that we, compared to the earlier generations, are only Shirayim. So there's a lot of different meanings in it, but the point is, that's what the pasuk is saying, that they're the ones who deserve this tremendous reward of Elikus. Then the next pasuk continues, L'ruach mishpat, and for a spirit of judgment, L'yoshev ala mishpat, for those who sit in judgment, V'ligvura, and who have strength, M'shivim ochama shara, the ones who return battle, who fight back, shara, by the gates. So now, again, the Gemara Darshan's phrase by phrase, that these are more different levels of tzaddikim and the different things that they accomplish. Or the ruach mishpat zehadonis yitzrei, the ruach mishpat refers to a person who judges and fights against his yetzer hara. So Rashi here explains that it means that he forces his Yetzer Hara to do tshuva. He forces his Yetzer Hara to do the right thing. In the Gemara is also in Sanhedrin. Rashi there explains it slightly differently. That it means that when Yetzer Hara tries to get him to do an avera, he successfully fights against it and won't do it. When it continues, those who sit in judgment, Zahadon din emes la'amita, this refers to a person who judges a din of truth for the truth. So we often have the expression don din emes la'amita. So Tosfos here, and also in other places where this expression is in the Gemara, explains like this. A din emes would be obviously the opposite of you can have a person judges falsely. But you can have, let's say, for example, that a dayan realizes that there's something wrong with the testimony of the Edim. His sixth sense tells him, his gut feeling tells him that these Edim are lying or something. So if he just followed plain halacha and he said, well, you know what? Listen, you know, the Torah says trust two Edim, so that's that. We don't have to try to figure out whether in fact they're telling the truth. We'll just ask them the regular cross examination questions and then have done with it. That would be din emes, but it wouldn't be din emes lamita. Lamita would be when he uses as the expression goes, his fifth shulchan aruch, and realizes and then ferrets out the actual truth over there and course examines them in a way to bring to light what they're trying to do. So that's done din emes lamita. So therefore the double expression. The Beis Yosef actually and at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat brings a different point of it as well. He says you can have, let's say, so you have a judge is judging a dayan is judging a din Torah between two people, between Reuven and Shimon. So he looks up, or he looks up in Poskim, or and figure. Well, because fine, you want to say Shmerel and Beryl, fine, you can do that too. Whatever the point is, that's you need names to stand in for that. The point is, let's say, for example, now the dayan figures out, okay, so the halacha is that Reuven is chayav to pay, and Shimon gets the money or whatever. So now you could have, though, that the dayan has, he's not biased in favor of one of them or not, then b'chlal, he has no business judging the din Torah, but you might have, for example, let's say that he's friendly with Reuven, and therefore he's upset that he had to rule against him, or he's friends with Shimon, and he's happy that he was able to rule in his favor. The Beis Yosef says that also wouldn't be emes lamita. Emes lamita is where he's got no partiality, no negia in it at all, and he's just judging on the merits and not even letting his favoritism to one, not even letting his friendship with one or the other affect anything. Anyway, so that's the Yoshev al HaMishpah. The pasuk continues with the Gvura, then you have a person who has strength. Zahamis Gaber al Yitzhar. That means a person who overpowers his Yetzer Hara. So here Rashi explains it means that he doesn't follow his Yetzer Hara to do an Avera. So before we had Donis Yitzhar, where he forces his Yetzer Hara to do Tshuva, here it said he doesn't follow his Yetzer Hara, which it comes out then in that case that the Ruach Mishpat is greater than the Gvura. In Sanhedrin, Rashi actually says the other way around. He says the Gvura over there is that the person, his Yetzer Hara, tells him to do an Avera. He says, not only am I not going to listen to you, Atzalachas, I'm going to go and do a mitzvah instead with that same energy and that same resources and whatever that you wanted to have me do an Avera. So therefore, according to that, Gvura is greater than Ruach Mishpah. Anyway, the pasuk finishes off, the Shive Mochama, those who return battle, those who fight back, that refers to people who give and take in the war of Torah. When you have people sitting in the Beis Medrash and learning, and one is asking a kasha and the other is answering, and they're arguing back and forth and piling up as you have in the old depictions over there. You have, you know, people piling up stacks of svarim over there in the Beis Medrash, each one trying to prove their point. That's the Mochamta Shel Torah, and that's what we're saying when people are engaging in that, and the Eidoshter appreciates that, and that's Meshivim Mochama. They're the ones who deserve this reward, Menashem. And when it finishes off, Shara, the gate, Elu Tamar Chachamim Shemashkimin or Ma'arivin Lebatik Nesias or Lebatim Midrashis. That refers to the Tamar Chachamim who come early and stay late in the Batik Nesias and Batim Midrashis. So Shara, Rashi explains, in the sense, they become as if they like they were the gatekeepers. They're the first ones to open up the door of the Beis Medrash in the morning and the last ones to close it when they leave at night, as if like they were the gatekeepers. So they're the ones they were saying who also deserve the special reward from the Eibishter for their devotion to learning. So then the Gemara continues, Omra Midas Adin Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rebbeinu Shel Olam Manishtenu Eilu Me'eilu. So the Midas Adin asks Hashem, why are these different than these? Right? You're mentioning that all these people that were mentioned in these two psukim deserve a reward. What about others? Don't they deserve something as well? So here you actually have a different gusa. The next line we have here in square brackets, it's printed in the Gemara, but it wasn't in the original text of Ein Yaakov. So the original text was just Omalei that Hashem responds with the next pasuk talking about the ones who drink and get drunk and do things inappropriately. Here in the Gemara, it spells it out further. So Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Oskar BaTorah Oiv Kechavim Loi Oskar BaTorah. That the Jews are Oisek BaTorah, therefore they deserve that reward. The Goyim were not Oisek BaTorah, and therefore they don't deserve any kind of reward. Omalei, then the Midas Adin answers. So again, if you have that line in there, it means that the following pasuk is going to be the Midas Adin accusing that even some Jews are guilty of the following things. If you don't have that line in there, then it means that these following psukim are talking about the goyim or that they're acting inappropriately, and therefore, as the Gemara is going to say, they deserve to go to Gehenna. So the pasuk continues. But gan eva by yayin shogu. Also, these have gone astray with wine of asheicho tov gomer, and they've gone wrong with strong drink. And the pasuk continues to describe them and ends off poku plilia. So again, the simple meaning of poku can mean they went out. In Aramaic, the shortish pei kuf means to go out, like nofak. So poku, they went out plilia in judgment, meaning they judged in a wrong way. Or the word poku can mean to stumble and fall, as the Gemara is going to bring a positive. So it means they stumble in judgment. So it means, in other words, so in the poshut sense, it means poshut dayanim. And we know a dayan is not allowed to judge a din Torah, and a rov is not allowed to pass in halacha when he's drunk. So now the pasuk is saying, but you have people who don't pay any attention to that, and they get drunk, and they still pass in, and judge and whatever, and therefore they deserve punishment for that. So here the Gemara says, "Vein poku ela gehenim." The word poku refers to that such people wind up in gehenim, as we find the word poku being used in the sense of gehenim. Shenema v'leisiel chazois l'fuka, as we find when Abigail is telling David. It was actually in an earlier piece of the Gemara that we skipped, which we'll get back to over the next couple of months, Bez Hashem. But they have a poet over there where Abigail meets up with David, who's on his way to go and wipe out Novel and his whole household because of the way Novel had treated him. And Abigail tells him, don't do that. It shouldn't be for you, Lefuka. Same Shodesh. Lefuka is the same Shodesh as Poku. And she's telling him that if you do that, that's going to be a serious Aveira on your part, and you're going to wind up in Gehenna. So we see, in other words, that the word Poku means Gehenna, that she's warning him, don't do that. The in plilia ela dayanim, and the word plilia refers to dayanim shenem of nasan biflilim, as we have the case in Parshas Mishpatim where a person injures a pregnant woman and makes her miscarry, and the pasuk tef talks about that he has to pay mei vlodis, he has to pay the expected value, the value of the babies, as we learned about in Bava Kamma, the difference basically between how much she's worth now unpregnant and how much she would have been worth hypothetically we sold her as a slave woman pregnant with, and she'd have babies, and then he pays the difference. So, and the pasuk is the nosan biflilin, he gives it according to what the judges evaluate. So we see that the word plilin means judges. So poku plilia means that such judges wind up in Gehenna. So what? He did end up listening to her, and he didn't go do anything to Novel. And in the end, we learned previously that actually not long after that, when Abigail came back and told Novel what happened, then he went into shock, and he had a heart attack or whatever it was, or a stroke or whatever, and he died a few days later. We learned in Rosh Hashanah that Hashem gave him an extra 10 days for one thing, because he had given food to David's 10 servants that David sent to him, and also because it was the 10 days of Aseres Vetrova. So in other words, the pasuk is saying, in short, that you have all these great things that a person can do. He can be doing what Hashem wants and looking forward to Hashem's glory in the world and learning Torah and subjugating his Yetzer Hara and so on and so forth. But he also has to be careful to stay away from this vayayin tov or vayayin shogu vashecho tov. So even though it's brought by the way in different places that the agadah in each masechta is especially appropriate for that masechta, even when it seems to be on a different topic. So we could say that maybe over here, that, you know, here on the simple meaning, the Gemara is bringing all these things in this sugya and Megillah, because the whole bunch of things that Rabbi Elazar said in the name of Rabbi Hanina. But we can also see a connection with it, where after all, you know, chayiv adam l'sumi v'puria and all that. But after all, a person needs to know to keep it under control. Okay, getting back to the Megillah now. The pasuk says, "Vatamud b'chatzabes hamal hapnim." So the pasuk says that Esther came and she stood in the king's inner courtyard. So Omer of Levi, given she gila beis hatzlamim, what happened was, now you can imagine, Achashverosh's palace has idols all over the place. So when she comes to the part where there are idols, especially nistalkim imena shchina, then the shchina left her. We learned before, Vatubash Esther Malchus means that she was clothed not only with royal robes, but also with Ruach HaKodesh. Now that she came into that area, the Ruach HaKodesh left, the shchina left her. The Umra, so she davens to the Eveshen, she says, Kaili, Kaili, Boma Azavtoni, the beginning of Kapitel Chavbe is until him. Hashem, why have you abandoned me? And she's asking, Shema Atadon, Al Shogun Kamezid, Bal Unis Kirotzen, are you judging that a person is just as guilty when they act the Shogun as the Mezid, or the Unis just as much as the Rotzen? Now what does this mean? So Rashi explains it means the fact that I'm coming voluntarily to Achashverosh. Now we learned before, she's saying on herself, Hasher avadzi avadzi, that now I'm going Berotzen, but still she's saying to the Eveshter, you know good and well, this isn't truly Berotzen, this is only the onus because of the situation. So are you going to judge me so harshly because I'm going voluntarily to Achashverosh for the first time that you're not going to allow the Ruach Kodesh to come with me? And Iyun Yaakov actually mentions in this connection, so we talked about yesterday when we learned about that, when we learned about Asher Avadzi Avadzi, so I mentioned something that the Shavus Yaakov says, and the Shavus Yaakov is also the author of the Pirush over here, Iyun Yaakov, on Ein Yaakov, who's an important posik. So I mentioned yesterday about a case that he describes in one of his Shilas Atrovis, where a group of Jews had been attacked by bandits, and one woman offered herself that they'll go and rape her and she'll save everybody else's lives. And the question is she now also to her husband? So he explains it in that vein that you have over here. On the one hand, she's saying, "B'chasher avadti avadti, I am going to be also to you because now, to a certain extent, I'm going berotzen." On the other hand, she's saying there's certainly a major component of onus in this. I certainly wouldn't be doing this completely out of completely voluntarily. So with that said, though, Marsha explains differently because Marsha says, "Look, I mean, the fact is, was it onus or was it rotzen? Here before she was calling it rotzen. How now is she calling it onus?" So Marsha says, we're actually not talking about the fact that she's going to Achashverosh at all. She's saying, the fact that I'm going into a place of Avodah Zarah, a place full of statues. Now, a Yid has no business being in such a place, but I'm doing it only because I have to go to Achashverosh, because Mordechai told me to. Are you going to judge me for that so harshly that you're not going to allow the Shechina to be with me when I'm in this vulnerable situation? She didn't regularly go into Achashverosh's throne room necessarily. The Pashtos, other times she came to Achashverosh was he'd be in his private apartments or whatever and then he'd send for her to come to him. Now he's sitting on his throne and she's coming to him. So, and besides that also, I mean, you could say very simply, other times she didn't need the Shechina with her. Now she's in a desperate situation and she needs the Eveshter's help to say the right thing and not to slip up or whatever. So now, when the Shechina left her, then yeah, she's very worried. In fact, Marsha points out, the Gemara continues, wait, before we get to what Marsha says, she says, maybe you hold it against me, Al Shekrosiv Kelim. The fact that I'm calling him a dog. Shenema, in that same capital, Kapitel Chavbeis, later on in the capital, you have the pasuk, Hatsila Mecherev Nafki, save my neshama from the sword, Miyab Kelav Yechidasi, save my Yechido, which is one of the names of the neshama, from the dog. So she's saying, Hashem, you're holding it against me, and you're taking away the Shechina from me because I was disrespectful, and after all, you have to show a certain derech eretz for a king. So fine, Chazru, Kurat to Aryeh, so she fixed that up in that same capital, she calls him a lion. Chenema, as the posse, in the next posse, it continues, so she ain't even Aryeh, save me from the mouth of the lion, or Mikanu Reimim Anisoni, just like you saved me from the horns of the Re'e. Now that capital, I mean, it's like all the capitals until them, it was written by David HaMelech, and that particular thing about the Kanu Re'eim, for example, the Medrash mentions, happened with David, where at one point, David was attacked by a Re'eim that lifted him far off the ground, 100 amos off the ground, and is clinging onto its horn. And he says, Hashem, if you save me, I'll build you a bis mikdash that's 100 amos tall, like the height of his horn. So it does reflect David's experiences. However, it also says that this capital, particularly, is also Beruach HaKodesh about Esther. We learned back in Yuma, for example, the very title of the Kapitel, Amatzeach al Ayelas HaShachar, refers to Esther, because he said she was like an Ayelas, like a female deer who's very beloved by her husband, the same way as Esther, as the same way as Achashverosh was infatuated with Esther, and HaShachar, because the same way as dawn is the end of the night, the same way Esther, the story of Megillas Esther is the last nest that's recorded in Tanakh. And Marashah goes on to point out over here many, many psukim in that kapitel that reflect what happened with Esther. You have over there the pasuk, which refers to Esther's circumstances. Like we learned before, she was orphaned already from birth. When Mordechai is davening on behalf of the Jewish people, and particularly invoking the schos of Yaakov, Va'ata Kaddish Yoshev Tehilas Yisrael, refers to that the Hashem, you so to speak, sit on all the praises that Yaakov said to you during all the years when he was working for Lavan, V'chobot Chavisemei, like a worm, if the worm's power, a worm is a very weak creature. What is its power? Is with its mouth, in the same way we Jewish people, our power is with our mouth, the power of tefillah. And he goes on to explain a whole bunch of other psukim in the kapitel that they actually refer specifically to Esther. The Medrash mentions more of them, by the way. The Medrash mentions that when she came in, and the guards, they all knew the rule that Kol Asher Yaveh HaMelech Asher Lo Yikareh is going to be killed. So they started whispering among themselves, you know what, when she gets executed, I'm getting those jewels of her, and I'm getting that piece of clothing of hers, which you literally have that in that kapitel. They're literally deciding among themselves in advance what they're going to do with all her finery after she gets executed, as they figured she's going to be. It belongs to Achashverosh, but I guess they figured that, maybe they figured that they'd be able to sneak some of it away, basically. Whatever. The point is, the Medrash mentioned that's another pasuk in that kapitel that refers to Esther's experiences. So Marshall also says the part about the dog and the lion, it's not just like we're saying that she showed disrespect to Achashverosh. Really, Marshall says it's like this. She was figuring that the whole problem came from Haman. And Haman, sure, deserves to be called a dog. But now she claps, you know what, the real danger is not so much from Haman. The real danger is from Achashverosh. Like we said before, the Achashverosh hated the Yidden even more than Haman. Now she says, now I realize that. So therefore, if I say that only Hatzila Mecheret Nafshim Yad Kela B'chidasi, I'm kind of minimizing the Yeshua that you, Hashem, are going to bring to us. I'm making it as though all you did is you saved us from Haman, who's only a prime minister after all. No, I'm going to recognize that you're going to save us from Achashverosh, the powerful king who's like a lion. I'm going to recognize all the greater your chesed that you're doing for us, and therefore she mentions the Aryeh. So not just, in other words, a disrespect for Achashverosh, but like as if by saying Kelev, she's minimizing the greatness of the nest that's going to happen. The pasuk continues by Yihir Oisam Melech Gogoma. When Achashverosh saw her, then he stretched out the scepter. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gimel Malachi Asharis Nizdam Nelo Ba'us Hashar. Three Malachi Asharis came to her at that moment. One lifted up her neck, because after all, she was fasting for 3 days, and she's terrified of what's going on over there, and her head was drooping. So now the Malach lifted up her head, lifted up her neck and her head, so she'd actually be able to look straight at Achashverosh. A second one drew a chut shel chesed, a thread of gracefulness over her, so that even though right now she's weak and pale and about to faint and whatever, that Achashverosh should see her as beautiful. And a third one stretched out Achashverosh's scepter, because he's sitting far away from her. So therefore, Malach had to stretch out the scepter. When the pasuk says "Vatikrav Esther, Vatikrav Baruch Hashayve," it doesn't just mean that she walked closer to the throne. She's like as if she's frozen in place. So the scepter had to be extended out towards her in order that to So Marsha points out that actually, you know, when you get down to it, you have these three, the fact that you have three malachim over here is actually hinted right there in the psukim. Because you have, usually the expression when somebody is graceful in somebody else's eyes, the usual expression throughout Tanakh is motzah chayim ve'enav. But here it's not motzah chayim, it's nosah chayim. Where the word nosah literally means to lift up. So it means that he lifted up. So he lifted up her neck and her head so that she'd be able to appear more graceful in Achashverosh's eyes. Then the chut shel chesed is the words in the pasuk chen be'enav, and the stretching out the scepter is vatikrav Esther vatikrav Baruch Hashavit. Why is it b'chalav say vatikrav Esther? Should just say vatikrav Hashavit. So it means, in other words, that she means that she was far away. She could only come a little bit closer. Vatikra Esther, she just started coming a little bit closer, and already Vatikra Baruch HaShavit, and she's able to touch the tip of the scepter because it was stretched out towards her. So you actually have the point about these three malachim is actually hinted at in the words of the pasuk.
Whether
the Shekhinah came back to her or whether it didn't. She asked, she said, Kaili Kaili Vamazatani. So maybe I guess the Eved Shteh answered her tefillah and the Shekhinah came back. I don't know. The Maharal makes an interesting point over here. He says, you know, part of the idea was that you have to have a reconnection kind of between Ahasuerus and Esther at this point. You have to have in order for Ahasuerus to be willing to grant her whatever she wants, it has to be that there's a certain kiruv hadas between them. So he says, why three? The question is, why three malachim? Why can't you just have one malach does all three things? So one answer is, al derech, if we have that one malach can't do two shlichias, like you have by Avram. But the Maharal isn't satisfied with that answer, for all these three things have to do one with another. So he explains, the vote is, like you have one representing bringing Esther closer mentally to Ahasuerus, mentally and emotionally to Ahasuerus, another one bringing Ahasuerus mentally and emotionally closer to her, and a third one, the actual connection between them. So you have, like, so to speak, three elements of their connection, and therefore those are represented by three malachim. So the Kama Moschai, how much was that scepter stretched out? Amar of Yirmiyah Ba'aba, Shtei Amos Hoya, the scepter was originally 2 amas long. They had Nidai Al Yud Beis. The Malach stretched it out, so it extended out to 12 amas. So he stretched it out an extra 10 amas. The Amrila Al Tes Zayin, some say he stretched it out to 16 amas. Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi Amar Chavches, Rav Chista Amar Samach. You have another opinion, 28, and another opinion, 60. That's in Ein Yaakov. In the printed Gemaras, instead you have the Amilal Esen Ve'Ava. Some say 24. The Masnisa Tonash Al Shishim. And then in the Braisa, we learn that it was 60 Amos. Now, where do you get all those figures from? Marsha says a fascinating thing. If you look at the actual pasuk. The actual pasuk over there that describes Ahasuerus seeing Esther and stretching out the scepter is very wordy. Really, all I would have to say is by Yosheth or something to that effect. Instead you have byhi chiroi samelach es Esther amalka medes bechotzer nosa chen veena by Yosheth amelach leEsther, etc. So he says like this. The 12 amos comes from the fact, if you count the number of words in the pasuk from the beginning through the first time where it says shavit, then you have 12. So according to that opinion, the pasuk is written that way with all those extra words to reach a number of 12 by the time you reach the word shavit, and therefore it represents 12. The 16 gets it from, or rather he says till vayoshet, till the word vayoshet, vayhi chiroi samelach. Es Esther Amalka Emedes Vachotzer Nasa Chaim Beena Vayoshet is 12 words. The opinion that says 16 is counting until the word Shavit, or after Vayoshet Hamelach La Esther Es Shavit, so 4 more words, so another 4 Amos making 16. The opinion that says 24 comes from counting the words in the entire pasuk. The entire pasuk amounts to 24 words. And the 60, he says, that you have from the beginning of the pasuk until including the word shavit, you have 60 letters. So that mandama follows the number of letters. So, the Gemara continues. V'chein ata moitza ba'amosa shal bas parei. You just have the same thing when bas parei's arm was extended out to reach the basket where baby Moshe was in. Then also it stretched out and was saying the same thing that stretched out to 60 amos. Another example of Hashem stretching out something to 60 amos is by the teeth of the Rishoyim. You have the story that the Gemara tells in Gemara Brachas in Perek Haroya, where Oig Melech HaBoshen had picked up a gigantic mountain 3x3 parasa intending to throw it on the Jewish people, and then the Eveshtib brought ants that started hollowing out the mountain, so it slipped onto his, so it slipped off the top of his head onto his shoulders, and then he tried to pull it off, and Hashem made his teeth extend outward like fangs, so they burrowed into the mountain, and he couldn't get it off. How far does teeth extend? The Gemara is saying 60 amos. Shenem, as the pasuk says, Shini Rishoyim Shibarta, Hashem, you broke the teeth of the Rishoyim, but Amar Shlokesh, I'll take you Shibarta, Ela Shir Bavta. Don't read Shibarta, you broke, but Shir Bavta, you extended. So there's a case in history where Hashem extended the teeth of a Rasha, of Oig, in order to prevent him from doing what he was trying to do, and extended out 60 amps. A lot of times we find, by the way, that 60 represents a lot of times you find that 60 represents a complete number. First of all, Rashi explains that one way we can learn it is because the pasuk could have said Shein Rosha. Why does it say Shinei Rishoyim? So you have an extra yud in the word Shinei and an extra yud and mem in the word Rishoyim. Yud plus mem equals 60. That's where we're getting the 60 from. But b'chol, a lot of times in the Gemara, we have 60 is considered a complete number. We have the concept of bitul b'shishim. You have a lot of times where the Gemara uses 60 as a large round number. So it means in each of these cases, we're saying that the Eibishter extended out whatever it is that needed to be extended, l'tova, in each case, l'tova, in its own way, as far as it possibly could. But to its complete metzias.
So you
wait, one at a time, right? Yeah, by Shem Shem. Oh, so you have also there where the gates are 60 amos wide, the gates of Aza were 60 amos wide. Yeah, there's a lot of 60s in the Gemara, but here the Gemara is focusing on things where something was stretched out to 60 amos.
Yeah. Why do you need this nest by Esther that just stretched out? She could have walked over. What's the reason?
That's the point. The pashtus we're talking about because she was so, scared she couldn't move, and therefore, therefore it had to be extended out towards her.
So this nest
happened. Yeah. Yeah. Then we have one more opinion. Rabba bar Ofer on Omer Meshumer of Elazar Shashama Merabe Rabba Merabe must sign him and extend out 200 arms. Okay.
If you didn't,
how far could she have been?
He wanted to see her.
Yeah, but I mean, so it's a Chatzar HaMelech. It's a big area, so it could have been 200 arms from where he's actually sitting. Yeah. By the way, the Midrashim mentioned that there were several chambers over there, and like she's walking through, she has to walk through one door and one entrance way after another until she finally comes to the inner one in front of Achshverosh. So from whichever last one that she went through until Achshverosh's throne might be Taka still a considerable distance. By the way, the Medrash mentions also that Achashverosh is thinking to himself, you know, we have a reversal over here. Here, a few years ago, I wanted Vashti to come to me and she wouldn't come and she got punished. And now I don't want Esther to come to me and she's coming. He hadn't called for her in 30 days. Maybe he had lost his cheshik for her or something like this. By the way, the Medrash mentions that also a Malach had to, he was ready to turn away from her, like the show, I don't want to see you, and let the guards come and do with her whatever they're going to do. The Medrash just sent a Malach, slapped him in the face, and forced him to look at her. And then, as we said, Nosachim Ve'enav, and one of the Malachim actually gave her a chut shel chesed, and everything developed from there. So the pasuk says, "Vayom Allah Hamelach Begemusah." So the king asks her, "Malach Esther Amalka," and he says, "Ad Chatsi Hamalchus." I'll give you up to Chatsi of the kingdom. Now, it can't mean, in other words, Marashah says he's literally offering to give her half the kingdom. First of all, a king is not going to do that, literally give away half his kingdom. And besides, she's his wife, Mashakon Seisha, Kona Baila. If he gives her the half, he gets it right back. So what's the point of it? So rather, it means, "Ad Chatsi Hamalchus V'loy Kol Hamalchus." I'm not willing to give you something that the entire empire depends on, and not something that is choytzetz, that makes a division in the kingdom. The rebuilding of the Bismikdash. Now Rashi explains why that Dovash choytzetz b'malchus is because the Eretz Yisrael is in the middle of the world. The Eben Shesia is in the middle of the world, and the whole world grew outward from there when the Eibishter created the world. Since Achashverosh ruled over the whole world, so Yerushalayim is literally in the middle of his empire. So he's saying the thing that's in the middle of my empire, Yerushalayim, the Beis Mikdash, if you ask for the rebuilding of that I'm not going to give. But anything else you ask for, gezuntehe. What even makes him think she might be asking for that? I mean, you know, it's not like he knows she's Jewish. But he also knows that she was raised by Mordechai. So maybe she's coming. Maybe Mordechai sent her a message that it's time to ask for that. Anyway, Marusha says a different point about Choytzetz B'Malchus. Another point of it is that Achashverosh, the whole reason why had Achashverosh stopped the rebuilding of the Bismikdash in the first place was because the Kursim and the other Goyim in Eretz Yisrael had mastered on the Jews, claiming if you allow them to rebuild the Bismikdash, they're going to use it as a base for rebellion against you, and then your empire is going to end up getting dismembered. So now he's saying the same thing. The building of the Bismikdash, as far as I'm concerned, is Choytzetz B'Malchus. It's going to disrupt, it's going to destroy my empire, and then break it in half, and therefore I can't allow that.
They never said the Jewish people is not worried because they can lose their business and their estate because of...
Yeah, right. So here, Achashverosh... Yeah, so we Yidden shouldn't think that the Geula is going to disrupt anything, but Achashverosh, with his Goyish cup, figured that it would. Okay. Well, I mean, he's not wrong, but yeah. Anyway. Okay. Vatoymer Esther Imal Melach Toiv. So Esther says, if it pleases the king, Yovei Amelach Vahoman on Mishter, then the king and Haman should come to the party that I'm going to make. Tonanabon, Ma Rasa Esther Shazimna as Haman. What was Esther, what was Esther's idea in inviting Haman to this party? Ahasuerus, we understand. She needs to get Ahasuerus privately so she can tell him what's going on. Why invite Haman? So a lot of opinions. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a pachin tum the lalachdei, because she wanted to set a trap to entrap Haman. Meaning, in other words, that Marshall says she figured like this. Previously, Ahasuerus made a party, and Vashti ended up getting trapped and killed. Maybe now history will repeat itself, and I can make a party and invite Haman, and he'll also get trapped, and he'll end up getting himself killed, as in fact happened. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yehi Shulchanim Lefneim Lefach, let their table be a snare, be a trap for them. So she was hoping that the table will be a trap for Haman. Rabbi Yeshua, Mimbesa Biolanda. Rabbi Yeshua says she learned it from her father's family. Now, she couldn't have learned it from her father because her father passed away before she was even born, but she heard it. Rashi says, Shama Tinoikis Kodin Kain. She heard children learning the following pasuk. Shenema, the pasuk says, Imroiv Sanacha Hachaleu Lachim Begomer. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat, etc. And the pasuk finishes off, Hashem Yishalom Loch. Hashem will repay you. Artikli Yishalom Loch. El Yeshli Menu Loch. Not only Hashem will make him a peace with you, but Yeshli Menu, Hashem will fill in and make him that he'll fall into your hands. So therefore, she figures, I'm going to give my enemy Haman bread to eat, food to eat, whatever, and therefore that'll cause that Hashem will hand him over to me. Reb Meir says she doesn't want that Haman is going to go and get advice from his family and whatever, and go rebel against the king. He's going to see, in other words, that he's going to see how important he is, and he's going to go and start plotting to overthrow Ahasuerus. But if he sees that he's being invited to this party, then that will make it less likely that he's going to do that. Rabbi Yehuda says she didn't want that they should know that she's Jewish. Like this, why is she inviting Haman, the arch enemy of the Jewish people? Must be she herself is not a Jew. For one thing, you know, she's still keeping the secret all those years, but also she didn't want that the Jewish people are going to rely on Chos Lonim Beis HaMelech. We have a sister in the palace. We have nothing to worry about. So like this, she wants to make sure that nobody realizes. Rabbi Nechemiah, and also if they knew she's Jewish, then Haman himself might start modifying things, and Rabbi Nechemiah, Mekadesh LeYom, yeah, well, that's exactly the thing. Rabbi Nechemiah, Mekadesh LeYom, Yisrael, Ochis, Lonim, Beis HaMelech, so the Jewish people don't think we have a sister in the palace. We have Sichu, Daitim, and Arachim, and they're going to get distracted. They're going to figure we don't need to dive into the Eivishter for Rachmanis because we can rely on Esther. So, yeah. Rabbi Yossi says she wanted him to be available at all time. That way, maybe she can trip him up with something. At some point, he may say something wrong or whatever, and she'll be able to accuse him to the king. Rav Shimon ben Nasu Omer, Ulai Yarugish Amokim V'Yasel Bonu Nes. She was thinking maybe the Eivishter will see what a desperate situation we're in, and Hashem will have Rachmanis on us. Look at this. Rashi says first of all that I have to bring even our enemies close after these, after treat them so friendly, and I have to hand for the Rosha and set aside my own cupboard, so the Eivishter will realize how desperate the situation is and have Rachmanis on us. Rav Shimon ben Nasu, yeah, okay. Yeah. Rabbi Shua ben Kochim, his bitter light upon him, Kadesh Yehorid Uvehi. Rabbi Shua ben Kochim said she figured to be nice to Haman, maybe that way Ahasuerus will get suspicious of what's going on and he'll wind up killing both her and Haman. In other words, she's willing to be Moshe Nefesh as long as Haman is killed, and Rashi brings based on a Gemara in Tainus, in many empires in those days, they had a rule that when one minister dies, then the whole, whatever they were planning, whatever they were plotting, is nisbato. So now, if Haman is removed from the scene, then his gzeda will be bottled because of that way of doing things. That was the rule that, if we're the Gemara mentions elsewhere about senators in Rome, and it was a similar thing over here, yeah. Rabbi Gamliel says Ahasuerus is a very fickle king. He can easily change his mind. So if I get him, fine, I can get him to agree that Haman is dangerous and needs to be removed, but then he's likely to just as well change his mind the next time he sees Haman. If I have Haman right there on the spot, then it's very easy to get him to do something and then carry it out right away before he changes his mind. However, Rav Gamliel says we still have to resort to what the Mudoi says. Rav Elazar HaMudoi, he has a reason. All the other reasons so far explain why she had to invite Haman, but why not invite some other ministers as well? We still need a reason why exclusively Haman. So the Tanya, Rabbi Elazar Amudoyim, Kinatu B'Melech, Kinatu B'Sarim, that she made it this way. She made that the king and all the other ministers are jealous of Haman, and that makes it more likely that he'll be defeated. Rabbi Omer Lefnei Shever Goyin, Rabbi says you have a pasuk that says before pride goes before fall, so she's going to make Haman as proud as possible, and that makes it more likely that he'll be destroyed. Abaye v'Rabbi Damatavayu v'chumam oshes es mishteihem. The pasuk says in their heat I'll make their party. The original context is about Belshazzar, where they return home from a battle that they won, and because of that, then Belshazzar made his party and they were drinking and everything, and then they got destroyed that night. So she figures the same way, when Haman is at the top of his of everything, that's when I'll have a party and then Hashem will destroy him. So the Gemara finishes off. Ashkechei Rabbi Baravur Leliyo. So Rabbi Baravur met Leliyo and asked him, Amalei, Kiman Chazi Esther, but of the Hachi, Taka, what reason was Esther using? Amalei, Kolo Tanoi, Kolo Amaroi. She actually had all of these reasons that all of the different Tanoim and Amaroi mentioned. She had all of those in mind in inviting Haman to the party with Achashverosh. Yom Yem Mashiach Ha'Geula, Yod Adabez. One of the things, one of the nevuahs about the Gola talks about surface, about France. The Gola Sachela is at surface, Yushua Sorei HaNegev, Olam Hashim Barzim. So when he mentions surface specifically, that means that there's a special connection between France and the Gola, because the real complete birur of the world is accomplished by the birur and the aliyah of the Jewish people in France. Because that was the most powerful clipper, the most powerful din in connection with Napoleon and so forth. So now it's changed from Mirakotze to Lakotze and became a tremendous place of Torah and Yiddishkeit with Nisbaru to the point where you have a Yashvus for Pnimi, and therefore that's a major step towards the Gola. Halacha, when you're washing dishes on Shabbos using hot water, so you can't use hot water from the tap anyhow because you have a problem with boilers, but we're not talking about that. Let's say you have hot water prepared before, so he mentions you shouldn't pour the hot water directly on the kalim, because that would be, and you have a problem with bishul on the leftovers of food over there. Instead, pour the water into another kali and then put the kalim into that.
What time is